TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I hope I don't bother you. I've left my mess here, cookies, had some milk. I've just pushed it to the side while we record. I hope you won't be bothered by it.
Chris, clean up your mess. I can't take it anymore. It's too much, Chris. How could you ask me to sit here with those crumbs on the table?
You're serious?
Of course I'm serious. Do I look like a... Does this look like a face of a Vulcan who's not serious?
Okay. Simmer down before someone has to drag you away from the mic and I have to find another co-host for this episode. Yes, everyone, we're going to be talking about the fifth episode of Strange New Worlds Season 2 today, Charades. Here is a quick rundown of the story. When a shuttle accident almost kills Spock, he is put back together by aliens with colorful names. There's just one problem. They left out his Vulcan DNA. And they did so at a most inopportune time. Spock really needs to impress T'Pring's mother if their engagement is going to continue. But how is a fully human Spock going to focus on meeting the demands of a Vulcan tradition when Captain Pike is cooking up delicious bacon? It's a most unexpected, strange new twist that only a mother could know and that ends with a kiss. So, Matthew, are we just going to jump straight to the kiss, or where do you want to start with this episode? Because I think you've got thoughts.
Oh, man. So, I think maybe the best place to start is actually with the humor of this episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that you touched on in our outline was the idea of humor in Star Trek. And I think that, you know, humor has always been a part of Star Trek. One of my very favorite episodes in all of Star Trek is A Piece of the Action, which is a very humorous episode.
Yep.
The whole thing is really played for laughs. But I think at the same time, it's done in a way that also is trying to make us think, right, about the ways in which cultural contamination can happen, what can happen, and all those type of questions. And, of course, that's Star Trek's beginning of discussing the ideas of prime directive, why we don't mess with certain cultures at certain points, all of those type of things. So, you know, there's a larger narrative to that, but it's also an incredibly humorous episode. The whole thing is very funny. And I do think that this might be the quintessential episode of Strange New Worlds that actually shows what some of the issues with Strange New Worlds and Discovery are overall when it comes to writing. And it's their insistence on modern vernacular and a modern way of acting and composing themselves so that these characters, and this could be an argument for why it doesn't really fit with canon, but, you know, Star Trek was always much more based in the ideas of that this was almost like a stage play, Shakespearean in nature.
Yeah.
And so when they did humor, the humor actually came across more like something like Much Ado About Nothing type of humor, right? But this episode, I think, very much suffers from a writing that just feels like a CW teen show. And I think that's not what we want in Star Trek. And I think that's one of the reasons why this episode has kind of widely been panned on social media with fans who've not really enjoyed this episode. And I think in general, if you ask me, I think this is actually the worst of what Strange New Worlds can be when it comes down to the ideas of like writing and all of that stuff. It's just, it feels off. Because it feels like a modern comedy instead of something that fits in with the larger meta narrative of Star Trek, but also just you know, when Star Trek does humor, what Star Trek humor is like. This feels like an episode of Star Trek Friends.
Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, that's a way of putting it. Let me state up front, before we get into all the details, I quite enjoyed the episode, but I very much understand the feelings of people who didn't and what you're talking about. And I have mixed feelings about it because I think it's one of those situations where if I just watch it as a standalone episode and I don't worry too much about it fitting into the mold of Star Trek and what I expect from Star Trek in terms of tone or language, it's fun. But then if I put it in the context of that, and if I also think about how it's going to read 10 or 20 or 30 years from now, which I think is a legitimate way of considering Star Trek, then yeah, I have concerns about it as well. What's interesting about the writing is that the episode was written by Catherine Lynn and Henry Alonzo Myers. Now, Henry Alonzo Myers has written a number of episodes for the series, and when you consider what they are, it's interesting that he delivered this one, because he wrote Children of the Comet in season one, and A Quality of Mercy, and The Broken Circle. He also wrote Spock Amok, which explains part of why he's on this one. But then his writing partner here, Catherine Lynn, this is only the second episode of Star Trek that she's written, and the first one was the Lower Decks episode, Wedge Douche. So there you can see where the humor is coming in. So for her, I get it, but for Henry, looking at some of the other ones that he's written, it is interesting that the tone here becomes so much, like you say, like Star Trek Friends or like a teen sitcom, something along those lines. And for me, I think it plays so much into just the language that's used. It's too contemporary, in my opinion,
right,
for Star Trek, because like you're saying, Star Trek was always like a stage play. And when you watch those Star Trek episodes, even the original series, but especially all the series from the 90s, they do feel a lot more like stage dramas, even when they're funny. The language feels a lot more like language that is timeless. And so when you watch it later on, it still works just as well as it did before. But what we're getting here, especially, but has been a problem throughout Discovery and Strange New Worlds, is that the writing, they use words and phrases that are so common today, but weren't in the past and likely won't be in the future. And so it really dates the material, and it mm-hmm. kind of pulls you out of the Star Trek setting, the science fiction setting.
You know, it's interesting because I'm thinking about this episode specifically and something like the Kelvin timeline
mm-hmm.
and the way in which they deal with Spock there. And I'm thinking, you know, there's that moment, of course, in 09 where Spock is in front of the Vulcan council and them talking about his mother, right? And he rejects their offer and he says, live long and prosper.
Right.
And so he does it in a way that, of course, has all of this dripping sarcasm to it, but it's still done in a way that you could maybe see a younger Spock from, you know, the original series doing that. You know, the Kirk there feels slightly more modern and yet not so far away that I can't also see us popping in 09 and seeing some relevance to some of that. And it's a close tie in the sense that they're trying to basically do the same thing. They're trying to find a way to bring in new people to Star Trek. And the way they're doing it here is by pandering to people and what they think people of modern tastes want. And I think, you know, that's the line that Terry Metalis and the writers of Star Trek Picard Season 3 were trying to walk, right? Which is to have some of that in there, but at the same time, allow the dialogue also to feel more in line with what it's continuing.
Mm-hmm.
And you had like a character specifically in that, where you have Captain Shaw, who is like a Paris type of character who mm-hmm. who is very nostalgic for parts of the past. And the vernacular then that he uses, Tom Paris was a character like that, right, on Voyager. And, you know, even like a Trip Tucker, where you're kind of leaning into his Southern roots, so it allows him to use some slightly more modern vernacular as well at times. But overall, these characters, by not allowing them to speak specifically in the way that we do, and that they've kind of gotten past a lot of that, is one of the things I think that showed how the characters in Star Trek and the world that they lived in had progressed beyond this need for us to be hip and cool, mm-hmm. right? That was no longer a driving force in our lives, as Picard would say. Mm-hmm. That there was something bigger and greater to our lives than just trying to be cool. Mm-hmm. And what we look like to others, you know, that humanity had transcended a level. And I think that's one of the ways, and I guess this episode, as we're talking about like the humor and the writing and everything, this is where I can see people and why they might complain that, yeah, I mean, Strange New Worlds is okay. It's better than Discovery maybe, but it's still not actually really tapping into the thing that Star Trek was doing mm-hmm. that helped us feel like there was a better future coming. Because mm-hmm. this just feels like characters that could have walked out of, like, I don't know, any mall anywhere in America.
Are there still malls? Are they open?
Well, yes, but okay, you know. but I mean, you know what I'm saying. Like, it's not... It's not pushing us forward and making us think that humanity has a grander future.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It just feels too comfortable with the now.
Yeah.
Instead of challenging the now, which is what Star Trek has always, I think, tried to do,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is challenge the now, because we realize that there hopefully is something better.
Yeah. I mean, of course, that's what Star Trek is all about. It brings up an interesting point, though, and this might be a good opportunity to combine in the discussion with something we had at the end of our outline, but it fits well now. And that's the question of whether this is the best use of time when you only have 10 episodes, because I hear everything that you're saying, and I agree that that's what Star Trek should be doing. But at the same time, we've had plenty of episodes over the years in Star Trek that were just light and fun and that didn't have a sure. heavy message and weren't trying to push our views of society forward in any real way. And we love those episodes, a lot of them.
Unless it's Prophet and Lace.
Unless it's Prophet and Lace, of course. But there are a lot of episodes like that that we really have enjoyed. You mentioned a piece right. of the action, and that yep. is a great example of an episode that really is fun, but it does have an important social message behind it. In fact, so much so that Enterprise even did a follow-up to it with The Communicator. But we've also had episodes that are just light and fun. And I think that some of my feeling, seeing some of the discourse over the last few days about this episode online, is that some of the complaints I have been seeing feel a bit weird to me, because they're not so much about what you and I are talking about in terms of, like, the language is too contemporary and so it doesn't feel like it's in the Star Trek mold. It's just more about making Spock look silly or something along those lines. But I don't think that's something that's new to Star Trek. I think the difference is that when we had 26 episodes per season, or 24 or 22 later on, we could have an episode like this and we could enjoy it and it could even become a classic and everyone was fine with it. But now we only get 10 episodes and there are all these story threads that are running through the light syndication of Strange New Worlds, and people have become accustomed to these 10 episode seasons of some story that's just driving you from start to finish. Thankfully, Strange New Worlds isn't quite doing that in the way that Picard and Discovery did, but it feels like that's become the expectation. And so if you give somebody a fun light episode like this, people get up in arms about, why are they doing humor in Star Trek? Why are they being silly? This just doesn't, why are they wasting time on this? And I just don't think we would have felt that way in the past. And so it's an interesting shift in the fandom as I look out at it to see people reacting that way, because I just don't, I don't think that would have been the reaction in the past.
I think it's an interesting question, and I think that there is some truth to what you say. I think that I wouldn't completely discount, though, that I think that this episode could have found a better way to do its humor and its story in the writing and be a much better episode. Mm-hmm. And that's where I hate to kind of like, I don't like being like the armchair quarterback, you know, sitting back. Well, if you read this way, and it, but it's like, I can see this episode happening where they aren't trying to make it as much of a comedy, mm-hmm. and it's a much better episode.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Yeah.
And so, but I think that you're right in the sense that, yeah, when you only have 10 episodes a season, I think about what are the dangling threads from the previous season when we're talking about the Vulcans, and I'm thinking of the Cybok thing and all of that type of stuff. Like, we're not touching any of that. And
that's
and
a good point. Yeah.
So it does make me feel like somewhat that we're wasting time. But I think I also feel like that because I just sense that there is a better episode here if it's written in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't feel that as much because, yes, we would be continuing stories for the characters, which is really important, which is what this whole episode is really trying to get at, which is driving at, you know, Spock's growth and the growth of Chapel and their relationship. And of course, with Spock and T'Pring and Vulcans and humans and all of these type of things. This is what I'd say. Mm-hmm. I think what happens is that the humor is actually undercutting all the very serious questions that are being asked in mm-hmm. this episode. Mm-hmm. And that has happened in many things these days. I would specifically call out many Marvel movies, like, you know, Marvel's movie Thor Ragnarok or Thor Love and Thunder or any of these type of films where the humor is so high, but the thematic elements are so like intense and actually, you know, really important that the humor undercuts what you're trying to do thematically for the characters because it doesn't allow you to actually deal with the ramifications. Like, what would this be like for mm-hmm. Ethan Peck's Spock mm-hmm. to go through this in a way that isn't just about him making fun of the fact that, oh, now apparently he has hormones and like he acts like a, you know, maybe 10-year-old boy mm-hmm. instead of being, you know, however old he's supposed to be in the series,
yeah.
as if he's never dealt with emotions before this ever. It's like yeah. the whole, it's, well, come on.
Okay, to that point, and I've thought about this a bit, I do think the way he plays that makes sense. If you've been around kids, if you've been around teenagers who are trying to come to terms with the changes in hormones and changes in emotions and how volatile that is and not knowing how to deal with it and really overreacting in situations and being confused in others. It's true, and it's mentioned in the episode, that Vulcans have emotions that are actually stronger than those of humans, but they choose to suppress them. So while Spock has those emotions, he has grown up suppressing them, and here they're unleashed, and he would be confused by them and not know how to deal with them, I think. And so I think that, like you said, the humor is maybe undermining some of the more important issues or questions or commentary that is in the episode. And I think that might be one of them. If you think about the idea of how would you react if suddenly you had all these emotions and you don't know how to deal with them? I think that's where we were joking at the beginning about the scene with him and Sam Kirk and the crumbs on the table. But yeah, like he doesn't know how to deal with the situation when he's feeling a frustration. Or even the bar scene when they're telling the joke again and he's laughing. And at first it's funny, but then he gets carried away and then it's just too much because he doesn't know the limit. He doesn't know how to regulate what he's feeling. And so it did make sense to me that way in that sense. I don't think it was the greatest presentation or the greatest writing, but it does make sense to me, especially as someone who's spent years, recent years around teenagers who were at that pivotal moment of finding their identity and learning how to deal with emotions in a way an adult would. Yeah.
No, I understand. I mean, I've been working with teenagers for a majority of my life.
Yeah. I think that's something maybe listeners actually aren't aware about the work you've been doing, but yeah.
Yeah. And young adults. And so I have a lot of experience in this area. Mm-hmm. And yes, obviously teenagers specifically can have moments of ridiculous outbursts and those type of things. But on a whole, a majority of the teens I work with don't act like this. And I think that the thing that I'm struggling with in the episode and the portrayal, especially of Spock, is that Spock has been through puberty, and he's also been able to witness and digest how humans around him interact for quite a long time. He was at the Academy. Mm-hmm. He's been on the Enterprise now.
That's a good point.
It's not as though he hasn't been able to understand and just watch how humans interact. He just hasn't necessarily been able to completely understand it because of the suppression.
Yeah.
But I don't think that that means that he's going to be acting like a 13-year-old boy. I think that's the issue, that it feels very strange to, again, that moment with La'an where you get the feeling like all of a sudden he's kind of sexually attracted to her because he's noticing her in that way. And then it's awkward. It's like Spock's not 13. Even if he just became like fully human, he's also an adult person. So he shouldn't be reacting in this way, I don't think. And again, I feel like there's a way to add some humor to this. Well, but just case in point, the scene where they're like, Vulcans talk like this. Right, and it's like, everybody comes off as stupid in that scene.
Well, what that reminded me of is it felt like the scene in Ted Lasso when Keeley imitates Roy Kent. So I'm Roy Kent. I'm so serious. I get paid to kick a ball.
But the problem is that she's doing that to make fun of him.
Yes, exactly.
They're doing that to try and help him actually understand how to be a Vulcan again.
Right.
And it makes no sense.
Well, but that's where the writing problem comes into play. And that's where I think that in the case of Catherine Lynn, whose previous writing credit was on Lower Decks, that comes through. Like, that would play well on Lower Decks.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't play well in the more serious setting of Strange New Worlds. So it feels more like sitcom writing.
And you think about the seriousness of the previous episode, and I think the way that, you know, we talked about that, obviously, here on Saddle Up, and some of our frustrations with that, but I think the questions that it was asking were helped by taking it more seriously. And again, I think the problem is that Strange New Worlds tonally is so modern. This is such a modern take on what humor is, which is, it's very childish. I think that's the problem, is that it doesn't feel like adult humor. It feels like childish humor. Whereas when I think of like TOS's A Piece of the Action, that's a more adult humor. Right. Because they're fish out of water. They're, you know, these kind of classic comedy tropes that we all understand, and they're thrown into the situation. And again, it makes for, I would say, more an adult take on the situation, whereas this is absolutely like the 13-year-old boy version of this story, which is, I think, don't don't write down to us as fans. You know, Star Trek fans, I think, expect Star Trek to be fun and challenging at the same time. I think you can do both.
Yeah. I don't think that they're intentionally writing down to us as fans. I think it's a lack of understanding of the universe that they're writing in the first place in this situation.
Well, and I think that could possibly be the case, which is why you end up feeling like that.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you have a story idea. It sounds fun. You write it. Like I said at the beginning, I enjoy the episode. I was laughing here and there through the episode at certain moments, but it didn't. Let's just take, you and I do the Orb together. We do DS9 together. And we've often talked about how DS9 is the funniest of all the live action series without even trying to be. If you took this exact same story and you put it in the hands of that writing team that wrote Deep Space Nine for all those years, you would have gotten a sophisticated, humorous story out of the same situation.
So case in point to that, looking for Parmok in all the wrong places.
Great
is
example.
The exact same type of episode that this is, but with I would say a much more mature form of humor, and it's extremely funny and humorous and well done. But that's an episode where we've got some serious things happening, but we've also got some fun, kind of silly things happening. Mm-hmm. And we've got a lot of relational things happening in that episode, but especially between, our couples that are forming on the show. So it's basically all the things that they're trying to do in this episode, but you don't come away from it feeling like, again, you're watching a CW teen comedy.
Mm-hmm. Another example where there is a bit of serious commentary and something that ties into Star Trek, very specifically the culture clash between humans and Vulcans, that I think completely goes by because of the sort of absurdity of the situation. And that is when Amanda is teaching Spock to pick up the teapot, and it's so hot. And she picks it up, and he asks her, "How did you do that?" And she says, "Well, one thing that I've learned," I'm paraphrasing, "but one thing that I learned from so many years of living on Vulcan as a human is how to hide your own pain." And I thought that was a very interesting statement. If you can imagine yourself as a human living in a culture like that, and in order to be accepted and in order to get by in your life, you have to learn to suppress your own emotions and your own pain. And you're not equipped with the skills to do it like a Vulcan is. You're not trained to do it. You've come there as an adult and you've got to deal with that. But that just completely goes by because what you're looking at in that scene is, okay, maybe she learned to hide the fact that it hurts. But if it's that hot, would it not burn her skin and blister her skin? But that doesn't happen. And then Spock does the same thing later in the ceremony. So there's...
Yep.
That might sound like a nitpick thing about, hey, wouldn't it blister her skin? But it is something that you notice as a viewer. And in that moment, it just negates what I think was put in there as an important line about how Amanda has felt living on Vulcan for so many years.
Right. Well, and to top that off with exactly what you're saying, you know, one of the most important points of this whole episode is Spock realizing the struggle that it has been for his mother to live on Vulcan. He's never thought of that struggle,
the way
that she's been viewed, the way people have responded to her, the way that people have basically been talking behind her back her entire life on this planet and basically treating her as if she doesn't really matter because she's not Vulcan. You know, she's a second class citizen. You know, you've talked a lot about that idea of, well, you know, because you live in an expat.
I know how she
Japan.
Feels. Yeah. Because that's how many of us are viewed here. Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, all of those type of things are so poignant for this episode. And yet, I do feel like they kind of get passed over too quickly because there's so much humor in the episode. And I think these are the type of things, exactly what you're saying. It's like there are these pieces in the show where if they had just leaned in more earnestly to those and more intentionally to that and cut back some of the humor, I think the episode would have been 10 times better, because this really is an episode that is trying to dig into our characters. It's trying to say things about their lives and the cultures that they live in, the traditions they have, what's good and bad about those type of things, right? And yet, I think that it kind of undercuts itself. You know, it's basically sawing the branch off the tree that it's sitting on, and it's not helping itself. And so that's frustrating, because, again, like you, I think this episode does have some really interesting things and some interesting commentary. It just doesn't do itself any favors when trying to get across that commentary.
Well put. And I think towards the end of the ceremony, where Amanda really kind of lays into T'Pring's mother and puts her in her place at the end, is another area where they could have expanded on that. And they have important things to say about how, even in our own world, how certain people look down on others and always, and it's not the cliche, oh, the mother-in-law criticizes you. It's not that's going on here as much as it's just that there are people who will always criticize whatever you do, because it's just their default mode of being, that they have to criticize everything that everyone does.
Well, and I think what you're driving at there is really, in all honesty, T'Pring's mom is a racist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, let's just straight out call it what it is. I mean, she's racist against Spock, and or speciesist against Spock and his mother.
Yeah.
Because they're not, quote unquote, pure blood Vulcans. You know, she's no better than the followers of Voldemort and Harry Potter, who, you know, don't see muggles as or muggles and or, you know, quote unquote, mixed blood wizards as being good enough. I mean, that type of attitude that her mother has is the same type of, you know, attitude that has led to the worst atrocities we've seen in the 20th century and the 21st century and before that. So, I mean, I think, again, we could really be digging into some big important things here. We just don't. And I think that's frustrating. And I also am disappointed in that because, you know, we've been playing with this idea of Spock and Chapel. And of course, now we have them sitting in a tree, K-A-S-S-I-N-G. And that's obviously a huge moment, right? We're building towards, you know, Christine coming to the realization and letting herself say it out loud, basically, I'm in love with Spock, and then basically having Spock say the same thing back to her about the feelings that he has, and then consummating those feelings with a kiss. I mean, that's a big deal, and I almost feel as though it doesn't feel quite as earned here, because things have just been so, I don't know, goofy.
I think it's hard to earn something like this with so few episodes, because they just don't have enough time to build the character relationships properly. But if I do think back to all the moments between Chapel and Spock, particularly, they're mostly from Chapel's side, right? And a lot of it's just Jess Bush doing it with her face in scenes and how expressing how she feels. I think there's enough there for me to feel like, from her side, certainly, that things did build up to this moment, and that it's earned as well as it's going to be in these really short seasons. From Spock's side, it felt a bit sudden for him to say, I want to feel this, and to give in. They did show in the previously on the situation from the season before where they kiss to pretend like, you know, there's nothing with T'Pring. But Yeah. What I mostly thought about in this scene is what we talked about, I think, on the previous episode of Saddle Up. Where are they going to go with the Spock character? How are they going to get Spock to where we know he is later on the timeline, and the relationship between him and Chapel later on the timeline? And so I'm starting to think about, okay, well, if they're going to get together here, what's going to happen next and where is it going to go? And unfortunately, due to work, I wasn't able to go back and watch some moments from the original series that I wanted to watch to refresh my memory on their interactions, and particularly Chapel's feelings about how Spock doesn't pay attention to her, to see if I could track how to get from here to there. And just going off memory, I feel like this can still work for me in terms of them having had a relationship and it doesn't work out and they still have to serve together on the ship, and there's this sort of coldness or disregard there on Spock's side, especially as he eventually becomes more and more logical again. I think it can still work for me, but I was a little bit surprised that they went there at the end of this episode. Right. And because we're dealing with 10 episode seasons, this is only the 15th episode of the show, and we're already here. That was, it felt fast. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the frustrating things about this is that we are asking people to have to do a lot of mental gymnastics at the moment to make these things work. And I don't honestly think that people should have to do these many mental gymnastics to try and make something work. And so I think that's kind of the place that I'm in with this, and why, you know, I've kind of just come down to, I don't really want to have to think about this, about how it fits with canon. So let's just put it in another universe so we can do whatever we want and make this easier and more enjoyable, I think, instead of having to feel like I do have to try and find a way to make this work in my head. And even if we come down to the end and they give us some kind of explanation to it, I don't know if trying to fit a square peg into a round hole is really the best way to go here. You know, is why should I have to do that in the first place? I don't know. I don't feel like I should be required to make that happen. Or have to do that in and of myself. So,
well, I mean, that's something that I think you hear from a lot of fans who are trying to put these pieces together, trying to make the square pegs fit into the round hole and vice versa. And my feeling is probably is that it's up to each individual if they're required to do that. Right. I think, I don't think the writers are requiring us to do that. So it's up to each viewer, each fan, what is your threshold for this stuff and can you let it go or not? And like you're saying, from your point of view, just don't worry about it and watch the shows. And if it doesn't all fit together and lead us directly up into TOS, then it's okay. We're just watching these stories. And that's how I feel at this point as well. I'm going to go with the writers with, this is the prime timeline and they're leading us up to TOS, but they're clearly doing things that are different, but it's okay with me. So I bring that up again, not to extend our timeline debate too much. It's more about some of the discourse that I see online and Facebook in particular. I mean, you know, we're lucky in the Babel Conference, which is our listeners group, that we have very thoughtful listeners who comment and we have nice discussions and chats in there. But if you go outside of that and go to one of the main groups, especially the biggest one, if someone posts something within one, two, or three comments, it just devolves into this rage against the franchise. And some people just absolutely cannot deal with any deviation from what's been on screen before. Right. And I think, you know, if you choose to approach it that way, that's your decision, but you're certainly not going to enjoy things. And they're not going to go back and write everything the way that they did in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. So you're not going to get that back. I mean, you still have it. It's there. You can watch it. It's not going anywhere. But you're not going to get that recreated in modern Star Trek. And I don't think you really should exactly either, because I think creative work does need to evolve with the times. But I do think, as we've talked about today, this particular episode maybe evolved too much and slid outside of the guardrails of what feels like Star Trek, even to those who have a lot of flexibility in how they view things.
Mm-hmm. I think, obviously, you know, I don't think it's off to say that of the both of us, of course, you're slightly more forgiving of these things. And, but I think, you know, the fact that here that even you find yourself in a place where, okay, this seems to really be pushing boundaries for no other reason than pushing boundaries kind of frustration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, maybe, you know, we do need to take note of that and maybe, you know, simmer down a little bit. And I think part of it, too, is that, and I've said this before, but I think it bears repeating, this is of the writer's own making, because I don't think you have to do this. I think there are other ways that you can write stories that are enjoyable for people that they love, that feel very Star Trek, and yet, you know, have maybe a slightly more modern sensibility, but you don't have to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
You can write the story in a way that still fits more with what we think of as canon, and at the same time be fun and enjoyable and all that. So yeah, I think that's the place where it just becomes slightly frustrating, because this is a choice they're making, and you know, you either go with the choice or you don't. And like you said about the episode, like kind of at the very beginning of our conversation, if you watch this as just itself, you know, it can be enjoyable, humorous, and all those kind of things. But in the larger whole, because this is Star Trek, there are expectations that come with that. And I don't think they're bad expectations. When you just kind of thumb your nose at the past, I think that that might be, you know, maybe the wrong choice to just kind of say, no, we don't really care about that. We're going to just do it our own way. You know, again, we talked a lot about that, of course, with Picard season 3 and what made it so successful, right? And why people gravitated towards it, because it had essence of something new and something very familiar. And I think a very easily digestible package. And when you do that, people sense the respect. They're more willing to give you a little bit of rope to play with, you know, because they sense that respect.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Does this episode raise any concerns for you with the upcoming crossover with Lower Decks?
Well, I think what it clearly says to me about this season is, yes, they leaned into the humor extensively in this season so far. And I think it does lead me to feeling a little less. I think what it just leaves me feeling is that this season has not been as enjoyable as the first season, which I felt like more adequately was able to find the balance between trying to kind of do something new and at the same time honor the past. It's almost as if this season to me has felt more like they're like, you know what? Screw it. We're going to do what we want. Yeah. And you can like it or you can not like it. But we honestly are tired caring whether you like it. And that's where it's like, I don't know. I don't feel.
Isn't that essentially what Akiva Goldsman said in the SFX article that we discussed previously?
Yeah. But I that's the thing that I guess I don't quite understand. When you had the response to season one of this show. Then you top that with the response that Picard season three got. Now, I know this season was already shot by the time, you know, that came out. But I mean, just alone, the response that people gave this for this show's first season, it was praised for being able to do exactly what I said. People really enjoyed the fact that it felt fresh and new, but at the same time felt much more familiar. So continue on that trend, I think, and we're not necessarily having the same problems that we're having now. And so,
yeah,
I mean, again, it's all about the choices you make, and they're making some interesting choices.
Quickly, just to be accurate, when I said, isn't that what Akiva Goldsman said in that article? I don't mean that he literally said that, but that's pretty much the gist of his comments in there, which was that, we know we're messing around with stuff. So
I mean, he literally said, we know we're body checking canon.
Well, yeah, actually he did say that. Yeah. So,
and so I think that, you know, that is absolutely clear here. In an episode like this, that there is, I don't want to say a lack of respect, but it is in a sense that they don't necessarily care.
Yeah. Well, see, I don't think there's a lack of respect at all. I think there's a lack of creative restraint. I think they really do care. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to do season one and create the show that felt like they listened to all the complaints from fans about how Discovery strayed too far from the familiar framework of Star Trek, especially with the aesthetics, but other elements as well. And they tried to rein that in, and they gave us something that felt true to Star Trek and true to the original series, but also new. So I don't think there's a lack of respect. I just think that they feel emboldened creatively to have this wider playground. And I think one of the marks of great creatives is knowing when to have restraint, when not to do that thing that you think is clever or great. You know, it's like editing. You know, my primary job, I'm a writer. My primary job, one of my primary jobs is editing. And part of the art of editing is to take things away, not to add things, and to trim things down and to remove a line that maybe sounds great to the writer but doesn't add anything to the story and might even take the reader out of the story.
Well, and can I submit to you that I think Trek has examples of this. I think Star Wars has examples of this, right? I think you truly have to understand what makes something work before you can begin to bend the rules of it and or come close to breaking them without actually breaking them. I think that, again, this is a place where maybe they don't truly understand the rules of Star Trek in a way that allows them then to be able to bend and make those more malleable. And I think you have examples of where that's really worked well. Again, I think of all modern Star Trek that we've gotten in this time period, with, you know, Paramount Plus era, you know, or CBS All Access, which it was before. The only one that is the best example of that is Picard season three. Everything else in some ways has had, I think, it's been kind of a mixed bag, and or kind of an absolute disappointment, I think. And so maybe that means that, you know, we need to go back to asking people to write Star Trek who truly understand the core of it, so that then they can expand on that core, which is what made the writers on like Deep Space Nine so revolutionary, right? Or I've been watching, you know, Enterprise season four, and the way in which Manny Koto, who God rest his soul, you know, just passed away. Yeah. I mean, I just, what a terrible loss. But his understanding of Star Trek, you know, even Brandon Braga said when Manny came in, it just became a completely different show because of his intense knowledge and love for Star Trek really, you know, reinvigorated that series. Mm-hmm. And so maybe I think, I don't know, maybe that's what we need.
Yeah. Well, my final thought on this is that despite everything that we've said, I think that if we were in the days of 26 episode seasons, we wouldn't quite be having the same discussion about this episode because we would just pass over it as one episode in a long season. And like we often joke about Profit and Lace, this one just didn't quite work within Star Trek. And that's okay because we've got so many more. But here, because it's 10% of the total we're going to get for the season, fans feel a little bit cheated. Is probably the reason for all the chatter about this episode that we've been seeing since it aired last week.
No, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I think, you know, in the end, I'm going to rate this episode probably 2 out of 5 hot teapots because I think it really fails to tell the story adequately that it's trying to tell, which is this very emotional story about somebody discovering emotion in a way for kind of the first time. And also this, you know, romantic story between two people, the clash of cultures and species. You know, there's so much here that just, there's great ideas, but the execution is way off to me. And in all honesty, I think this might be one of the worst episodes of the series so far, just because I think it fails at what it's trying to do. And to me, that makes for a bad episode. So,
Well, my rating, I guess I'll give this one 4 pieces of bacon that have cooled off too long.
Nothing worse than slimy cold bacon.
Yeah. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on charades. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to the Babel Conference on Facebook, which I mentioned earlier in the discussion. That's our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. And it is a closed group. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post for this episode of Saddle Up there on the timeline, and you can share your comments with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. And to find it, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook. It should come right up. If not, type the whole name, The Babel Conference. You can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose Saddle Up, and your message will mosey its way right on over to Matthew and me. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not taking pot lifting lessons from Amanda, where can people find you?
Well, you could find me all over social media. MattRushing02 is the moniker you'll want to look for. Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero are the places I'm most active, so I'd love to interact with you on any of those platforms. Of course, you can find me here on the network outside of Star Trek Talk on the 602 Club as we're talking about all of the fandoms we love. So many great big movies have been coming out this year, so many things happening, so please check that out. You can also find me here doing literary treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Chris, of course, we've talked extensively about you and I doing The Orb, where we're doing a 30th anniversary rewatch of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. We also mentioned Warp 5, where we're talking about the 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise. And of course, we've got Artificial Tango, which we also talked a lot about extensively with right. Star Trek Picard Season 3, as well as 2. And we'll have more stuff coming on Star Trek Picard soon. So check that out. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with 2 shows. One's called Owl Post with Drea Kaufman, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, as well as Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, you know, when you are not trying to figure out just how to tell Nurse Chapel that it just might be love, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'll get Spock to give me some tips on that. He seems to
good luck with that.
Have
good luck
it down. Yeah. Now you can find me, as you mentioned, elsewhere on the network, doing all of those shows that you and I do together. You can find me in the back catalog on many shows, many episodes. Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time as well. So there's plenty of my thoughts on Star Trek for you to listen to if you're interested. You can also find me in social media. My username everywhere is C Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. And I'd love to chat with you there. And also, if you'd like to help us keep all these shows going, everything we're doing on the network, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. I'd like to send a huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us now. We truly would not be here without your help. So thank you very much. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next week. I think maybe Sofia Coppola is writing Strange New Worlds?
Well, Chris, hold on to your saddles.